Yo,
hello. How's it going?
Yeah, not too bad, man. Not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. It's been a long time coming. This we probably talked about having this. I mean, I remember talking to you when I was in Turkey. Actually, that was like last summer, the summer before.
Yeah, it's been a while, man.
I think you've caught up though. I think your plans done a lot more work than mine has over the last couple of years.
Really? Nah, it looked like.
Yeah, I think you've done some pretty cool stuff. I was showing you guys off to a couple of one of my new bands anyway.
Oh, sick! Nice.
Yeah, you've done some good stuff.
Oh, cheers, man! Appreciate that. Yeah, I was just gonna have a little chat with you today, just like pick your brain. Obviously, you're the drummer and band leader of The Alchemist, right?
Yeah, of The Alchemist.
Cool. So when did that come together then, like, and how did it start?
So I started that band probably about 4 years ago. And, you know, like, a couple of the guys there, they're like part-time musicians. I'd been working with those guys with another band about another year before that. Mm. I was just like busy kind of session player, doing loads of functions wherever I could get them, you know, underscore. And then... you know, postmodern jukebox were kind of flying out as a bit of a thing, and I thought, you know what, guys, there's something going on here. So we jumped on it pretty quickly. We floated a few double bass players. You know, you take that first kind of 6 months to get recordings and stuff together, promo, and then we really kind of had it in the first year. We were quite busy, and then things calmed down a little bit. I think, you know, you put the work in and then you get the gigs and then you're right, like there's no work, because we're not doing any more work.
So
I went off and did a contract for a bit, and then I had all that time away, and I just started working with a band again, getting gigs in. And it's been really good last year. We did some mega gigs, and then with all this corona, the lead singer Eden, she had a baby, I've started a new project now,
right?
So, you know, just wait until baby's kind of all ready to go. I'm gonna get back and record and do new promo stuff. So
nice, man.
It's good.
Yeah, so is the new project with that lead singer still?
No, so the new project is kind of like an R&B, so kind of like Scary Pockets.
Oh,
so, like,
sick.
We've seen the postmodern jukebox thing, so it's like, there's something else out there now. Scary Pockets is kind of inspo now.
Man, that's so sick. Their arrangement's killer. Like, yeah, man, we play one of their songs, Wonderwall. Their version of Wonderwall. That's how we play it. Because, like, yeah, it was the same thing for us. And when we started our band, it was like, we don't want to, you know, I'm sure you've done the same. You play covers for as long as you can remember, and you play the same old covers, Sweet Child of Mine and things like that, and you just want to play it a bit differently if you've got to play it,
exactly,
you know? So it's kind of the thing, you know.
I really like, I think what's really important being in a function band, and as well for our egos, especially, so like we've got this 18-year-old bass player in the new project, and he's just insane. Likes to reharmonize everything. But, you know, like, we've got to make stuff interesting, and, you know, and when we do, and we do have some weird like modes and stabs and all the interesting stuff, you know, everyone buzzes off of it. How's my chain of thought on there? That was it. I was gonna say, like, doing stuff that's interesting for us, but then also kind of fits in, like, say, like postmodern jukebox or Scary Pockets. They're all kind of new trends in music. And you get like, there's a whole, this new jazzy scene as well, like kind of urban-y, kind of just like a bit hip-hop-y, the J Dilla stuff, all the kind of broken beat. And we're like, that's what the new project's trying to be.
Nice.
I'm always thinking like what's the next trend in music? Like there's a massive garage revival at the minute as well.
100%, so I've seen that.
So it's like a lot of the new project is working on that. Like when we first did The Alchemist, we got so many inquiries, so many.
Yeah.
And then like obviously loads of other vintage bands started coming out, and I was like, well, the work's drying up. You know, I'm always thinking about like, what's my next project? I think I think each project for me now has like a bit of like a 2-year lifespan on it.
Okay. So
how I'm starting to think about it. But
yeah,
you know what? The Alchemist still does bring in work, even though this Corona malarkey is a bit like,
yeah,
a bit mad.
Yeah, it's affecting everyone, isn't it? All the bands.
But that's how I'm starting to think about it. Like, what's like the next trend? Like, I was even talking about starting like a walking band the other day, you know, like,
yeah,
walking,
yeah,
with a snare and, you know, everyone's walking about. That's a trend.
Mm.
That's what I'm thinking at the minute in terms of getting someone with the band.
Yeah. When did the Alchemist start then? How long ago was that?
So I think the first year, it's probably about 4 years ago now, I think we kind of really started putting stuff together. That first year was good. The second year was less so. And then we got busy again.
Mm.
And then in between that, I did a few like, summer contracts and stuff.
Mm.
Like, I think for the Alchemists, we're always super busy, like pre-seasons, like before like summer kicks in, like April, May, June, we're like super busy.
Oh, cool.
And then for some reason, August, we're not so busy. And then kind of like October, November, we're super busy.
Mm.
And then it's December's dry. Like, I don't know, we've got a weird trend with the Alchemist gigs.
Right.
But, you know, it all works tight in the end.
Yeah. So are you going to run the new project like sort of side by side with the Alchemists sort of thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Sort of prioritize that one, the new one, a bit more, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the main aim. But I mean, like, I want to get creative this year as well. I want to, like, I just, with all this Corona malarkey, I'm sat down learning the piano. I want to do my own arrangements. Like, do you do all the arrangements with your band?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how does that work?
Yeah, so, except, like, most, yeah, all the arrangements I do, unless they're like, you know, like I just said, the Wonderwall cover that we do, which is pretty much exactly the same as Scary Pockets. We tweaked it a little bit, but it's nigh on the same thing.
Yeah. Because you posted a video not that long ago, like empathy towards band members and stuff like that, which I saw that and I thought like that really kind of rang true with me because I've always been that kind of get up, go, get stuff going.
Mm.
And I can definitely be a bit of a twat when, if, you know, obviously Eden's having a baby and stuff like that, you can't just say that we need to kind of take a sit back and obviously these things will slow down.
Yeah.
And I think internally for me that was difficult and I had to definitely employ a level of empathy there.
Yeah.
It's
difficult, man. That is difficult. It's a difficult situation.
Yeah, it is.
Like, I feel like,
you know, everyone's got their kind of priorities and that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's difficult.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going to go with that.
But. No, well, it definitely is, man. Like, I've felt exactly the same as you. I'm definitely, like, I was the one that started the band. I'm the one that, I don't know how you run it, you tell me in a sec, but I, like, run everything, and especially from the start, it was like I'm booking, you know, when you put the band together at the start, you're, like, trying to organise the musicians, find the musicians, unless you already know some people, like, you know, schedule a photo shoot, schedule that recording, put the set list together, put an arrangements together. Like, there's so much shit to do. Then you've got to, you know.
That was the thing. It's come back to me now. So that's why I'm really picking up the piano recently, is because I really rely on the rest of the band as a drummer. That I've got to rely on everyone else to kind of put the arrangements together as well, because I'm not melodically talented. So even now at the minute, even with the music theory, I do know I'm playing around with Ableton and Pro Tools and stuff, but I'm putting stuff together, which is really good, because now, like, for me being a productive band leader, just being able to make the arrangements as well and present ideas to the rest of the band, it just, my workflow will definitely increase.
Yeah.
But like having, like, just being able to have recordings of like arrangements and stuff, you can just send to guys, even if you've got depths coming in like that.
Yeah.
Like fishing through old like gig recordings just so you can send it to a dep is a bit of a nightmare. Especially like, I know if like just in one bar I just like played it a bit loose and I was like, that's pretty bad or something.
Yeah.
You don't really want to send that to somebody. But it's like, where you do the arrangements as well, I think that's why just being music, like melodically talented and being able to do the arrangements as well, and that's been my biggest weakness as a band leader. But I think trying to think what my biggest strength is, but like I just come down to the online stuff, finding agents and like speaking to everyone you know, speaking to your friends, drum teachers. Like my drum teacher is really, really good. He just put me onto loads of agencies and name dropping everyone, and just having a bit of a laugh and a joke. And everyone's really supportive, and just, you know, you get the gigs, don't you?
Yeah, that's it, man. Have you found most of your work through agencies, or as time's gone on, has it been more word of mouth, or through, like, have you done Facebook adverts or anything like that?
I've not done Facebook adverts. I've saved up a good bit of money recently just to start doing it. It's been a lot through agents. I would say 50% I did through agents. I did a Wix website. I learned SEO. I did a bit of AdWords. And I'd say the rest of it's been direct through the website. Just spending a few hours on Wix and, like, learning Google AdWords,
yeah,
that kind of marketing, that really pulled through. I mean, and then obviously word of mouth, that's always a big one. Like with the new band now, like we've only got like 20 followers on Instagram, but like we've played like 10 pub gigs, and we've probably got about 4 or 5 functions out of that.
Nice, yeah.
So it's been, that's actually quite a blessing. Like the keyboard player. He's got some friends who work at Manchester United or something, you know, just having knowing friends, they support some strings, and you know, it's good.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. That's cool, man. What else was I going to ask you? What's like sort of the biggest challenges you've like faced being the band leader? Because that's like, obviously I'm band leader of my band, so it's like, I want to pick your brain, see how you deal with things.
being patient with people, get like, obviously you can't get people to just organizing rehearsals, people can't always make it.
Mm-hmm.
I always kind of say to myself, if I've got a goal for 3 months time, I'm just gonna say, let's just say in 9 months, and just be super patient and cool about it. And just think what else I can do. And what I found is then when I'm being more patient with, especially my new band, where I'm deploying this level of empathy to which I didn't apply with the previous band, I seem to be getting results a lot quicker. Accountability, I think, is an important one. I'm a bit of a nightmare when it comes to calling venues for gigs. Like, especially with a new band, we just need to create a bit of a band pop together, get a few pop gigs down, just so we've got like a couple of band there just to throw a promo and stuff. And I resent calling people, but like, you know, you have your bandmates there. It's like, can I have some accountability? Let's do this today. Let's do social media today. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And incorporating the band or other band members into that, doing it with you.
Right.
They kind of see me doing the work. It's not like, well, Ryan, what do you do? Like, even though I've put gigs in, like sometimes I've obviously felt a bit annoyed when like I'm organizing a video shoot and people are getting there late. And it's like, I've put so much work into that. Do you not understand? And it's like,
yeah, they don't see it, man. They don't see it.
And just bringing people into your world and just still working and getting the results. You kind of want to build them relationships to just keep everyone together.
Yeah, definitely. How do you run, like you said just then, that this new project, you're doing it a little bit differently. With regards to like the Alchemists and maybe any other bands you've run, how did you, or do you, like, you know, are you fully in control of the band and organize everything, and sort of everyone has a say? Yeah, but
I still organize everything. I just think I'm a bit more patient. I'm, you know, it's not just like, let's just get work done. It's you know, you're also friends, and even sometimes business mind is like, I just want to talk about the band. What's next? How are we doing stuff? What's the next goal sort of thing?
Yeah.
And it's like, sometimes like someone just needs a, how are you, man? Like, I've had a bad day. My missus broken up with me, or, you know, something like that. And kind of once you get to that, and then you get to rehearsal and end up having a jam just because you like playing music together.
Yeah.
And then the next day that person, let's say, Tom will chat out to Tom. He's a keyboard player inside us of the band. And he's such a good producer as well as a keyboard player. So he's a blessing to have in the band. Yeah. He does all the production. You know, and then before you know it, he's had a tough week, and you say how are you? And then he's just produced all the work that you need. So, you know, I don't know, if just being super nice and being there for your team is
that's the thing. You never know what someone else is going through, even if they're hiding it, you know. And if you just come in with a bit of an attitude of like, let's get this done, and it doesn't seem like you care, maybe. I'm not saying you, I mean just in general. Like,
definitely, like, in my head now, it's like, I'm hoping the guys from the Alchemist see this and say, like, this is me being a bit of a twat, or I have been a twat, and I'm recognising that I've been a bit of a twat. But, you know, it's, you know, you just deploy patience.
Yeah, that's it, man. That's it. You got to, definitely. And it's all a learning curve as well. Like, I'm sure you've learned so much from the Alchemist and running that and how things have gone, that you'll apply and change differently into the new project and stuff.
Like, obviously, I don't know if you know a guy called Gary Vaynerchuk. He's a big big entrepreneur type dude. Mm. And he always kind of talks about giving up. He was meant to invest into Uber and all that stuff. I mean, he essentially lost money, and he just says, look, don't look back as a thing. And, you know, there were so many times with the Alchemist we could have acted, and there were so many gigs we missed just because we just didn't act fast enough. Mm. And, you know, I couldn't get the guys together when we needed to. And I try and ask myself why that didn't happen. But, like, with the new band, like,
How do you find working with, like, Depths then? Again, it could be from The Alchemist or something like that, but how have you found, like...
Facebook groups and messenger recommendations, they're the big ones. Like, we've got a list for the Alchemist now.
The people that know your repertoire and stuff. Like, they know your repertoire a bit.
Yeah, that's it. We definitely have had some bad Depths.
Mm.
You always got to try and get them in for a rehearsal beforehand.
Mm.
Definitely. But it's a bit frightening, like. But I mean, even when I depth for people, I hate depthing, but I have to do it just to fill the calendar, you know.
Yeah, of course.
But soon as you've done that first gig and you get, oh man, that's okay. Mm. Like, you're pretty sweet then from then on.
Yeah,
and then you get the callback, don't you?
What about if your singer can't make a gig? What is your position on that?
I mean, I used to get really, really annoyed back in the day. If someone just said they can't make a gig, I was just through the roof.
yeah, man, because of the hard work you put in. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I'm just now like, let's just get a debt, let's just crack on. Like, I'd like to think I work at such a standard where, like, especially the Manchester music community is quite strong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all my friends or kind of associates of music, people go to jams, all that stuff. You know, I play or hang around with some really good players.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've got kind of contacts in abundance anyway. So I'm not so frightened nowadays.
Mm.
I mean, some of the guys in the band are quite opinionated about some of the other people on the scene, which I disagree with. But, you know, you just got to crack on. It's a jigsaw puzzle. You're just trying to fit in the pieces and putting out fires.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, that's the
How
thing.
Do you depth a lot for Penthouse?
So, like, we have now a position where, like you just kind of said, I have like at least two drummers outside of my main drummer that depths, that know our repertoire. And again, like you were saying earlier, like we try to record as much as possible. So on a live gig, I always record through like laptop, you know, just the mix might be all right one night, it might not be, so I'll just always record. And then any tracks we like record from a promo, live promo, obviously I've got those individual tracks, so I can send a keys player or a drummer those tracks or whatever as much as possible. That's always what we've tried to do and continue to. But yeah, so I have two drummers outside of my original drummer who depths and knows our repertoire. And then we have two male singers now, and I have a list of depths, none of them I've used yet. And then we have two female singers, and female singers seems to be the sort of like most common singer, like easier to find the male vocalist, I should say.
So I've got a question actually.
Yeah,
so
man.
if How are you finding having multiple singers as an option? Has your inquiries increased?
It hasn't changed inquiry wise. It's more for the effect that, like, when we first started, we were a five piece with male singer, and that was so we're all male band. And like I said a minute ago, like, we were struggling when he couldn't make a gig, everyone couldn't work. But then if my drummer couldn't work, I could find someone, you know, because we're playing mostly weddings. So you're selling your band or your product with that male singer as the face of it. And brides and grooms are always picking on the vocal. You could really replace anyone else in the band. And they're picking on other things as well, but I found it's really mostly the singer. And so, it was just like, what else can you do? And it's not fair on him, because, like, you can't stop him from doing stuff and that whole, like, empathy thing. So we just decided to get another male singer and make it, you know, just a group of musicians who all knew this repertoire. And then we could go out as that five-piece male. Doesn't matter who the singer is, it's just the same quality. And we could go out as a five-piece with a female singer and have multiple options on that. People that we work with regularly and stuff like that. So now we've got to that point where we have a large group of people, musicians, who all know our repertoire. And yeah, that's kind of like in and out, you know. So no one's held back or anything. If they can't do the gig, I'm not going to hold any grudges. It's like, cool, okay, just let me know in plenty of time. And my guitarist is really good, actually. He'll if he can't make a gig, he'll let me know in plenty of time, and then he'll also find that depth for me, and then he'll teach him the repertoire as well. And I'm just like, it's fucking sweet, man. Like, you know, don't know how much that helps.
it's good. I'm a bit iffy in terms of being the band leader. I think where I can be a bit tough is that I'll just go and find a depth. But then I've always been unsure. Like, if someone gives me a good depth first time, I'm like, well, fine, I'll trust you. But I don't, you know, it's, I think one of my biggest worries with depths, I've got my footsteps here. Like, we had a depth who came in on like a Thursday night, and we had a gig on a Saturday. And then the depth dropped out last minute, and I think she was just really scared. And then they're like, well, what do we do? Like, someone cancelled for us. We've got that gig sorted, but like, what do you do when a depth drops out in the last minute, you know?
Especially if it's a singer, like, it's really fucks things up. But if it's, it's difficult either way, but yeah, the singer especially. But it is difficult. What else was I gonna say? Is there anything you wanted to talk about? Like, any questions you had or anything before I crack on?
So it's like 90s R&B, isn't it?
Yeah, our band was mainly started with 90s R&B, dance music, and a bit of garage music. And like you said earlier, like, there has been like an influx of garage music, so we just started adding more of that stuff. And then,
so if like the band's gonna change sound, where are you looking to go? Would you change the sound, or are you gonna stick with?
No, I think, like, that's the difficult thing as well. This is a question back at you as well. We joined a load of agencies, and you know, you still do now and then, like, other ones that pop up. But are you guys with a live network, or you ever worked with them?
No, I know of a live network.
Okay.
I think when I applied for them, I don't think our promo was good enough.
Okay.
We've just released new promo. I probably need to go have another apply. Because they're one of the biggest, like, my sister and two, a couple of my other friends are on there. Like, I've done some of their gigs depth-wise for other bands, but I'm not with them.
Yeah, well, they're good. But yeah, like you said, they're one of the biggest ones now. And when we first got with them, like, yeah, we had our own sound and style and stuff that we wanted to focus on, because it's like, they run so many bands, like, literally hundreds of bands on the website, and that's cool, but a lot of bands are the same thing. They're not in like a niche. There are a few, but like, most, and when you speak to them, they're like, the most popular thing that sells is a four-piece all-male band that plays a lot of indie rock. I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Well, we're a five piece and yeah, we're playing 90s R&B and like throwbacks to like shit that, you know, we like, yeah, my age group, late 20s, early 30s, grew up on. Like it was on the radio and that kind of stuff. And yeah, it, with those and maybe some other agencies, they don't really like you being a niche. It's really strange. And I, that's what I was saying. I don't know what you found. Obviously, The Alchemist so niched. You know, you're yeah, that particular style.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, this is what I said before. Like, The Alchemist, when we first started, like, we joined an agency called Freak, the first agency that we joined. We got inquiries every day.
Mm.
Like, we didn't convert. I think we only converted, like, 10%.
Right.
Still, nonetheless, being the only vintage band was such a...
Yeah, yeah.
Such a massive, but this is why I'm kind of, like... Because Scary Pocket said, like, becoming a thing. Mm. Now, I'm saying this on your podcast as, like, a Gary thinks... someone else
prediction
said Scary Pocket's band, then it goes off. I'm calling it now. But, you know, like, you've just got to keep an eye on trends because I remember that day, like, or then like a few months of getting all them inquiries.
Mm.
I don't know if our content was good. You know, it was the first set of videos we did. Few mistakes, but like now I know how to make a really good promo video and do all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm really hoping this time around I'm catching on a trend early and we do take a lot of the gigs in that niche market. Like, people still look for it. Like, I want to really get into Facebook adverts soon. Like, it's so cheap to like, you pay a couple of quid just for someone who's, let's say, from targeting The Alchemist, like someone who's kind of middle-aged, wants a bit of a swing or a quirky party, and then you just throw in all the stuff that they're used to hearing.
Yeah.
Bit of Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive in a swing way.
Yeah, man, quality. Yeah, I saw that just before we came on. I was like looking at your videos and stuff. It's quality, man.
But, you know, I don't, but there's so many, jazz swing bands now, we just don't get as much work as we used to. And,
yeah.
But I think niche is more important. I think if
that's what I think as well. I do agree.
I need to talk to the band, the new band at some point. Like, having maybe two or three different bands with two or three different niches is probably a way to go in the future.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good shout. Good shout. Sorry, go on.
But
yeah,
no, that's kind of where my chain thought ended.
Yeah.
But I think like, as well, if you want to market a band in terms of ad spend and stuff like that, like I found it a lot easier to spend on Google AdWords a lot less money. If like, if you try and buy words or terms such as like just function band, you're paying a good few pound a clip. However, vintage band, or you know, vintage swing, you know, very niche search terms, you pay a lot less money.
Ah, cool.
Which, you know, if you are having niche bands, and if you have three, four niche bands in certain areas, I think you'd limit ad spend massively. But that's my thought there. But
yeah.
It's now putting that into practice.
Yeah.
Take my own advice.
That's it, man. Yeah, like, social media is such a massive thing now as well. I mean, it has been for a while, but like, how have you found... like creating or using social media to like, you know, push your band forward, either Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, all of it?
So I found the Instagram quite good. I used to DM loads of event planners. I've got a few event planners on the books now.
Nice.
That was my biggest one. Gary Vee talked about LinkedIn a while ago. I've been DMing people on LinkedIn. I've got a couple of guys through there.
Oh, nice.
But actually doing page, setting content, posting content, I despise it. It's not my bag. We've got like another guy who's come and joined in as like a more managerial PR type person on The Alchemist coming. He's only joined in like the last few months. I think my intention is to work with the other band more and less with The Alchemist. But he spent some time just going on Facebook and just getting everyone to engage with posts and stuff. And he got like the page an extra 300, 400 likes in the case of a few days.
Yeah.
Which, you know, having someone who knows social media to come in to your band is something, you know, I recommend it. Someone who knows what they're doing, like sort of learning it yourself.
But
I'm pretty
pants at it,
if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think it's in, like, trying to find those things, like maybe social media, that you can outsource. Like, obviously, stuff that you can learn yourself and you should learn, and then stuff that you can be like, okay, I can outsource that to someone else, or if I can afford it, pay it for that to be done, you know?
Yeah, I think anything you do outsource, you should have at least some level of some knowledge.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you know if someone's doing a good job?
Yeah, that's
the first thing, I think.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Did you outsource anything for the house?
Not really. Except for agencies. You know, that's pretty much the only thing, but I stand in it. Nah, really, it's I just do all the social media, everything, really. It's a lot of work. you know what it's like. Yeah, man. But
yeah, I mean, it's quite a blessing at the minute. I've got a fair bit of teaching work keeping me over with this corona malarkey.
I think that's an important thing as well, especially like now, like the coronavirus taking like really every freelancer, well, I mean every business, everything, like you can't fucking me up with no one, so everything's got to be online, like, you know, and you can't really gig online, like obviously there's like live streams and stuff.
Yeah,
but it's
I've seen a couple of my mates are doing just loads of Facebook live videos, and you know, just keeping creative, like it's a good time. Like are you on Pop Top?
No, I've never heard of it. What's that?
Just another agency site, but they do multiple suppliers, so other wedding suppliers and stuff.
Okay.
They've just announced that they're going to do online entertainment.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, there's definitely a change in the market in some way. What do they say? So they're promoting online entertainment, online classes. And I think they were like doing like cocktail classes. They were just suggesting them. There was something else. I can't remember. Mm. But,
oh, cool.
You know, I definitely do think there'll be a shift in terms of online entertainment, some way or form. I don't know. How a band's going to play a role in that.
Yeah, I think things like this that happen, like massive sort of shockwaves in culture, like they do change like the way things work, you know? This is going to happen like in some areas, and where that affects music, like kind of who knows. Like,
we were booked to play the Liverpool Waterloo Festival this year.
And oh, nice.
They obviously cancelled it, but they've already spoke to us about doing like a live event, like a Facebook live event.
Oh, cool.
So, I mean, I imagine with all the festivals cancelling this year, there's going to be some sort of online feature.
Yeah. How far have you been cancelled up to with like gigs and stuff?
So up to summer, basically. Up to summer's about where we are. I mean, there's some gigs, I've got stuff for next month that I've not even got to, you know, finding out if they're cancelling or not, which they probably are.
Yeah.
But like some of them are birthday parties, and you're not going to rearrange a birthday party. We've just got to take a loss on those gigs.
Yeah.
But a lot of weddings that we've got, they're just being rearranged next year.
Yeah. Well, that's the lucky thing, isn't it? If it's weddings, like people are still going to get married, and they want their family there, so it's like just change the date. So it's not that difficult.
Yeah. Well, we'll be laughing next year, won't we?
Hmm. Hopefully, unless it returns. Yeah, no, it's weird, man. It's a whole weird situation that's going on right now. And, you know, I think it is what it is. You got to make the best of it. And you got to look at the positive situation that comes from it, which is like, you know, you have this time, which is like any other time you would never have. Like, you wouldn't have this much time on your hands to practice, to, you know, redo your website, to like put some new set lists together, some new arrangements, to learn an instrument, whatever, you know? There's so much time.
Literally sat there on, we've got one of the schools I work, and they've got this, they're using Google Classroom, and I'm just like, guys, you need to be practicing. You've got all this time in the world. Like, all my mates are at uni, they're just throwing in 6, 7, 8 hours a day practice. Yeah. Like,
well, that's it. When you finish uni, like, I remember a lecturer told me at my university, they were like, you know, this is, you need to practice now because you're never going to have this time again. Little did they know, yeah. COVID-19 would be around in 2020. Give me all that time. You know. But yeah, you know, yeah. You don't get this time, so it's a rarity to get this time to practice and stuff. So
yeah, it's a blessing. Well, it's a blessing, not a blessing for some people, but everyone who's safe should be taking this opportunity, right?
Mm. Yeah, 100%, man, 100%. What else was I going to say? I think I've asked all my questions. Biggest changes. I asked you kind of what the biggest challenges were that you faced when you were talking about other people and that. Was there anything else you wanted to chat about? Musically, band-wise, topics? Go on.
Right, so I've been having a debate with my singer at the minute.
Right.
Where his ego lies, and it's like, we need to do a funk cover of Spice Girls, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, Spice Girls have just had a bit of a revival.
Mm.
They had their resurrection tour, whatever. And it's like, they are a great song. They're great songs, or definitely a few of them, to funk up and play it a function, like
definitely.
I just can't communicate the idea of how important, like, if there's a 90s revival going on, there's flipping garage, flipping R&B,
they got to be in there somewhere.
Spice Girls needs to be done.
Yeah. That's true, man. That's true. My keys player has been saying about one of their tracks, we've got to do it. So yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, someone's going to do a funk cover of Spice Girls soon. It's going to go viral, and I'm going to say it should have been.
Have you seen that? I'm pretty sure Scary Pocket's got a cover. Have you seen there? Spice Girls?
What cover?
I don't know what song. I'm pretty sure they've done a Spice Girls cover, though.
No, who was the cover?
Oh, Scary Pockets.
Scary Pockets.
Yeah. Pretty sure they have. Maybe I'm... might be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure I saw something.
Two people, one.
Ah, okay.
But even Backstreet Boys as well, like.
Mm.
And this is me saying, like, 2 years ago, four years ago, when everyone started getting buzzing about Post Malone Jukebox, it's happening again.
Yeah, yeah. It's just trying.
There's a demand for this 90s tunes in weird funk and.
Yeah.
If I don't do it soon, and, you know.
Yeah.
If any of you or anyone else, like, there's a land grab for this kind of function band, and there'll be a new reincarnation of a style the next few years, for the next decade.
Well, it all develops, doesn't it? It's constantly changing, and there's some bands that just sort of stay the same and sort of see it through. Yeah. Others just find different things to do.
I'm just waiting to start a Blink-182 tribute band. It's going to get good.
Yeah, man.
There's going to be a time. It's still kind of our time now, but I mean, in another 5 years, I reckon that's going to be a time for a Blink-182
tribute band. Yeah, man, no doubt. Have you seen any of your bands, like, since this whole shutdown, or have you just been on calls and stuff with them?
I've not spoke, we've been on band chat and stuff, like the WhatsApp groups and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The guitarist, the newer band, we're always chatting every other day, new song suggestions, all that stuff, different ideas.
Yeah.
But everyone seems to be practicing, working, grafting, doing what they can.
Trying to get through it and that, yeah.
So if you could be in any cheesy tribute band, what would it be?
Cheesy tribute bands. I mean, I've always wanted to be in a Jamiroquai tribute, but that's not cheesy.
But,
just because I love the band, one of my favorite bands. But I don't know really about cheesy. Don't know.
I wouldn't mind that. Gloria Gaynor. Just all the cheesy gay stuff, all the really happy bouncy tunes, man.
Yeah, funky disco, all that sort of
stuff.
Yeah, man, it's good play. It's good upbeat shit. Yeah, it's good. I was gonna say something else, then I can't remember now. It was a bad question. What was it?
Sorry, I got distracted.
That's right.
There's a lovely sax player I'm talking to at the minute.
Ah.
I was curious.
Yeah. What do you think is going to happen after all this coronavirus stuff is gone, and then when we get to back to like you know, hopefully normal sort of proceedings? Do you think it's going to be an influx of gigs, or do you think it's just
it's going to be a slow burner? I've definitely been thinking about this. So I think there will be a sort of change in terms of online. Like, the way I'm teaching at the minute is completely online.
Right.
Band rehearsals, a lot of people are doing their kind of home studio stuff. There's a lot of home studio vibe going on, which means people sending and sharing ideas. TikTok, people doing duets, weird, like, bass and drum TikTok duets and stuff. And there's some really interesting stuff going on in that respect. So I honestly think you need, if you're a working musician now, you need to be thinking about, have you got a home studio? You need to start building one, or getting the gear so you can work at home.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think even though rehearsals, obviously you need to have rehearsals, but I think a lot of rehearsals will be able to be mitigated with just sharing ideas. And being able to record well, and just be able to send a couple of takes to a drummer or whoever you need to do. And then you can create a rehearsed kind of idea piece, and then go into a rehearsal and be like, well, guys, you've all sent us recordings. We all know we can kind of play. We've got the ideas together.
Yeah.
Let's just bash it out in one rehearsal.
Yeah.
And I imagine what some of the best guys, they're doing that now. You know, as for actual work, I don't know. I still think people are still going to be frightened for at least till September. And only then, because I've not had any inquiries in. September, I think, is the earliest when we'll start seeing bookings and stuff come in. I think January. And January is generally quite dry. So maybe March next year is when I kind of really see the gig scene coming back around.
I don't know,
what are your thoughts?
I kind of been discussing this with my drummer and sort of thinking, you know, like, this is maybe a time where some bands, you know, might, you know, sort of part ways because it's too difficult to get through it. Maybe some bands would definitely start during this time or the end of it. Bands are going to start coming together, musicians who are hungry for work, been practicing all like, you know, however long it is, and just want to get something together. And then the other bands that are still going through it. I guess I'm kind of thinking, like, there will be an influx of it, because at the moment, like, I mean, British people, English people don't seem to be doing that well stuck inside. And it feels like if it's summer when it all kicks off, everyone's going to be like, beer gardens, venues, parties, let's go. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
And then it could just be like a massive bunch of bookings.
I don't know, just working in school zone, like, and I already know some schools are shut for September. So I know August like I said, I always, for some reason, my band's always kind of misses peak moments. So like August is quite quiet, but September could be really busy for us gigs-wise. But my prediction would be September would be if we are out and people are wanting that whole beer garden, whether a party, September's for me is probably where my guess will be.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. I think it's a good shout, because some of the stuff we had for May has been rescheduled to September. So
yeah,
it seems like the kind of month it's going to be. But how do you, what was I going to say? How do you like cool songs? Do you write a set list when you're performing for a gig, let's say a wedding? Do you write a set list and follow it, or do you call all the songs on the night?
Chops and change. I mean, with the Alchemists and Side Hustle, they are strictly, we write them at the start, probably within the first hour or so, depending on what, if we've got depth in or not, obviously songs change then.
Yeah.
But, you know, I kind of do miss the days of being not so much of a professional player and just, you know, absolutely winging it on the night, the stuff like that. I miss that as well, especially when I do depth stuff, and we're like, we'll just call something out. But player functions and stuff, I think for maintaining professionalism, you've just got to play your set, and you know, especially when songs kind of merge together and whatnot.
Yeah. Like segue into each other.
But if you're playing a professional gig, if it's not a pub, then you've got to be on point. You've got to play the set out of the grid. Mm. Otherwise, pubs,
yeah.
When they show up, just have fun.
Yeah. What do you guys use like from the Alchemist, and maybe even what you're thinking of using with the new project? Like, do you have any ideas of what you use about stage setup, like the way you position musicians for the perspective of the like guests and stuff? And do you think about lights? Do you use any sort of special gear or anything like that? Like when it comes to lighting and things like that.
So lighting, no, we've always just used like cheap sets of lights, just one colored and then one white, which would go in front of Eden. For the new band, not necessarily, I see what you're saying, more like stage arrangement, stage craft. Something we are definitely looking to at the minute is using backing tracks. So we're doing kind of like, one of the tracks we are doing is Fatboy Slim, proper 90s, nice. What's the song, Praise You. There's a lot of percussion in there, thinking about having a click track with percussion. Even using some brass sections. Like we've got a sax player coming in, and a potential trumpet player. Right, if they can't do the gig, we want to have a click track.
That's some,
I don't know if you've heard of DK Management, Damien Keys.
Yeah.
One of, like, they, when they send me over deck work, they use backing tracks.
Right.
And then they just have all the trumpet brass sections on the clip track. So I think that some of the other professionals, that's what they're doing. And that's something I want to get my new project on.
Yeah. No, cool.
But in terms of actual positioning of players, like, it's a four piece, so we have the two singers, keys and guitar. And me and the bassist are just sat in the back, so that can be kind of a staggered kind of square, like rhombus type thing. But you know, you depending on the venue, you don't really know.
Yeah. What kind of like venues are most common for like the Alchemist and stuff? Is there a particular clientele you see mostly, like age wise and like venue type?
Demographic, generally between early 30s to, we've been up to like 60s, 50s, 70s, 70-year-old birthday parties, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then, what was I going to say then? What was your question?
My question was, what was like the clientele you play to? What's the type of venues most common,
come into? Venue. Venues, generally like little fancy country kind of, like, it can be really fancy kind of big houses type things, to like little country park barns and stuff like that. Barns and big houses is I think that one of the weirdest gig, the coolest gig we did, it was like for a software company, I can't remember the name, Beyond Trust, but this way. But we did it at the National Museum of Scotland.
Oh, sound.
And
nice.
It was like this massive white hall, and then like when everyone's closing down, like we just ran off into like the dark, turned off bits, and it was like proper night. it was good fun.
Yes, man. Oh,
that was probably the coolest venue we've played.
Yeah. How do you so when you guys sound checking that, how do you sort of get your balance? Yeah, for a sound check, does someone go out front to listen, singer or someone?
Me and Eden, we all kind of take turns. I'll generally do the first kind of EQ in a bit, have a quick listen, and then the bassist will go out, and then the singer will go back out, and then we kind of all kind of get it agreed.
Okay.
By the end of it.
But yeah.
It'd be nice in the future, like, to have a sound engineer with us, sometimes the smaller gigs doesn't cater for that.
Yeah, absolutely. But even
bigger gigs, though, they have sound engineers there that I find.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's always the best kind of gigs, man. When you don't have to worry about sound, you can just play. Yeah. So much more fun. Yeah, we had that with a festival we played last year, and it was so fucking good, man. Like, You know, the amount of speakers they had, the stage, it was like, all we got to do is rock up, like plug in and just play 45 minutes straight and not have to worry about any feedback, any sound check, like, you know, mixing it ourselves and shit. And it's like, you just know it's going to sound good. much better though. But...
It's going to be a shame this year, like losing all the festivals and stuff.
Yeah, you think maybe next year they would maybe come out a bit more, you know? Maybe they go a bit harder next year. If we do miss summer this year, hopefully next summer we'll be making up for it, sort of thing.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about, getting, management or PR or, other external outsourcing? Just more on the getting the sales side and getting the gigs kind of side.
No, I haven't really thought about that. I started the band, found the musicians, and then the first thing we did was literally join. Alive Network was our first agency that I wanted to join because I worked with them 6 years before with another band. And then we just joined as many agencies as possible, which was a good idea because so many agencies seem to obviously want to sign you, completely you, and you don't sign to anyone else. And I've always said no to that because... it's like, I've never worked with you before, so I can't guarantee, and I'm like, if you give us loads of work, then yeah, it's cool, might do that. But, you know, you end up through experience, my experience anyway.
Alive offer that, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
They offer.
Yeah, they offer three different versions of it. And it's just, they take more of a cut depending on how you sign with them. And then, and obviously it's like a bit of a benefit to if you go exclusively with them. So, but I've just not found any agency in particular that stands out, but that
they all come at different times in different parts of the year. I think what I find difficult though is coming up with the aliases for the band,
because it's
just so many times kind of recreate a new band name.
Finding the very first name for my band, it was like it took me forever. I was like, you want me to do that again? Come on, man.
Obviously when you kind of do your market research, I've got a couple of mates, but you were definitely up there when I definitely found one of your alternative I think it was Headliner. Oh, okay. Entertainment Nation.
You're right.
I don't know, another one, but I'd seen your band and you had some other name.
Oh man,
Beats
or something. Yeah, something like that. Some cheesy, crappy name.
it's funny,
but I've not thought of any other ways to do that. It's literally just been agencies mostly, and then as time went on, last year it was a lot more of word of mouth, and then stuff you said, I did a few Facebook ads, and then definitely Google ads. I did them right in the beginning, so and I did Instagram as well, and it really didn't accomplish much, but again, you need to continually do it really to understand what you're learning and stuff like that. But Google AdWords, it did work really well. But then it's just it's just keeping up with the costs and stuff like that, isn't it? When you're trying to do other stuff at the same time, so.
I mean, I don't know why I didn't carry on Google AdWords. I mean, I remember, I had loads of time. I was doing a contract abroad, and obviously I had all the time of the day just to be sitting there studying it. And then I only spent about 300 quid, and then I must have got 4 gigs out of it, 5 gigs.
Yeah.
It was a good return on my money.
Definitely. That's the thing I think with social media. There was one point where I was posting I was posting on Instagram every day at one point, and the whole Gary Vee thing, it's just like make content, put it everywhere. And that's one thing I did learn, which was you just make content, like YouTube. I tried to make content for Instagram. I've slowed down way now, but I'm gonna try and get back into it. But
my questions and arguments with that is, I love Gary Vee. Got a lot of time.
He's got some good knowledge.
Inspirational character. But I find just calling people, nagging people, goes a long way. But then again, he says DM people, message people, and when I've messaged event planners, I've messaged 200 event planners, still get nothing. But that 200 first, you'll get a couple of gigs out of them. My argument is it more productive for a function band to go and message the event planners more than actually just creating content, even though creating content's good for any business or brand.
You know what he'd say, though? He'd say do both. But I think
it's picking what
I just find with creating content on every platform, I've never done Twitter, but I've made my Facebook or our band's Facebook page go directly to Twitter. So whatever posts on there, posts it straight to Twitter. It's probably not the best way to do it, but whatever. But
yeah.
I have had inquiries from every different social media platform, and it's literally someone contacted me from Twitter, and then messaged me through Instagram and said, "Oh, I found you through Twitter because I hashtag party bands." Like after I asked them, "How did you find us?" So I was like, oh, like, you know, this shit does work. Like, it's almost like...
Right,
you know,
that's good. Because, I abandoned our Twitter a long time ago.
I think...
But just to do the repost is probably really important. And that's probably something I'm going to do straight away.
I would say that at least... And the thing is, on Instagram, you can do that, like, little click the button and it reposts to Twitter and Facebook. So you don't even need to go on those, like, platforms, you know, if you didn't want to or whatever. And then you've got a website and then YouTube as much as possible. Obviously, YouTube's probably the biggest one for bands because it's like a visual representation of what you're offering.
I'm going to toy with the adverts as well.
Pre-roll
stuff. Google AdWords runs the same way. You do the same, but then you just play a YouTube video of your band, which I think...
I have already.
There's a lot of money that I'm laying out on the table and missing out on by not doing that yet.
I have seen a band... pop up once actually while I was watching the YouTube video. It popped up and it was just a function band advert, and I was like, oh, it's like the first one I've seen. So someone out there's doing it. But you know, it's just got to try it and, you know, see what happens with it.
Yeah,
you know. But
I'll have to have a gander at your YouTube.
I think my
Instagram is probably the best out of all the platforms that we've got.
With Instagram, are you trying to be more like, because obviously Instagram started as like a photography platform, and it's very, I guess the biggest profiles on there, unless you're a celebrity or something, are the most beautiful laid out and stuff. But again, someone like Gary Vee says, like, don't think about it too much like an art collection. Think about it, just, you know, just creating valuable content. So someone who's going to come on there, if they're interested in your band or something like that. Like, I've had clients that I've played for, when I actually meet them on the day, they said, oh yeah, we've been following you, and like, you know, I was doing stories or some shit like that. Like, this is when I was posting a lot and just trying to make as much content. Like, you know, you have to be creative when you're not fucking playing gigs all the time, you know, like, you gotta find ways of being creative. So but I have had comments on that before in the past of like, you know, oh, we're following your stories, and like, they enjoy following you because you're sort of doing something creative, I guess.
I finally get more with that on my personal Instagram as a drummer, for dead work and stuff. That's what I find. Like, I'm obviously curious about TikTok. You probably know about TikTok. That's quite scary, the amount of people who get likes and shares and that sort of thing. You know, I think TikTok's a new avenue in terms of being creative. But my Instagram has always been... Like, I think I remember you doing loads of abroad stuff. You were in Italy, I think, for a bit.
Last year, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and obviously you were posting stories and stuff. And,
That was a great opportunity, man. Yeah, that was great.
I bet it was mint.
It was quality, man. It was a long drive. drive. Yeah, it was good.
But posting it and staying on it like that, so important.
Yeah, it takes a lot of effort, but I don't know. What else are you going to do? What else can you do? All right, man. Well, that's been an hour. I won't take up any more of your time, but it's been awesome chatting to you, man.
It's good fun.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's real good.
There's a lot of thinking I've done in there. Like, there's a lot of reflection, and obviously you put some points in there. And I mean, I've definitely followed you for like last couple of years, I think.
Yeah, man. Cool.
You're doing some good work yourself.
Cheers, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, I hope you get through the COVID-19 all right anyway, man.
Yeah, man. Me too. All right. I've got a piano here anyway.
There you go, man. That's it. Practice, man. All right, man. Take it easy. I'll speak to you soon, bro.
See you later, man.
Bye.